Hogan, Sonny, good to see you guys again. Are you paying attention to who's in the World Series now?
Oh, I can't say I
No.
have been. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well,
Hogan?
the correct Hogan.
Me either, Tim. I went back home to my hometown where I grew up, actually, not where I was born, but where I grew up in Arkansas, El Dorado, Arkansas, for the first time in like 20 years.
Yeah.
Met with Sarah, Governor Sanders, in Little Rock for a little bit, had a great chat with her, and then went down and gave a speech. And it was real America, let's just say that. They're pretty fired up about a lot of different issues, and it was interesting to get out of the Beltway bubble and talk to real folks about some real serious issues, of course, that we face in this country.
But not the World Series. Well, the correct answer
I was
is
going to
that's
say.
not the yeah, that's not a
The
real series.
correct answer is who cares? I was rooting for the Phillies. I'm not a Phillies fan, but I was rooting for them. It's
Sure.
going to be Texas against the Arizona Diamondbacks. So the correct answer is
Oh,
who cares?
I think I'm pulling for
But
Texas then.
well, that's your
Three or
right as an
one.
American. That's fine.
Thank you.
But so frivolous things like an uninteresting World Series aside, I think we've had some really great guests on this show, but I think this is I think the guest who is in the context of what's happening in the world is probably the most important guest that we've had.
No
And I'm really
question.
looking forward to that. It's going to be a great conversation because that's what you get on this, the Line Drive podcast. Let's bring in that guest. We are honored today to have with us Robert C. O'Brien, former National Security Advisor to the President of the United States, serving in the Trump administration from 2019 to 2021, amongst his other very important positions that he's held in his life. The former National Security Advisor, Robert O'Brien. Sir, thank you very much for joining us. We really appreciate your time.
Damn, great to be with you, Hogan, and Sonny Joy.
Great to
Well, good
great
to
to
see you.
see you, Robert. You and I talk periodically, of course. We had the pleasure of working together in the White House. At least it was pleasurable for me. I don't know how much you really enjoyed working with me in the White House. But
You kept me out of trouble with the press, so that was
yeah,
good, Hogan. Thank you.
interestingly enough, Tim alluded to some serious things going on, obviously, around the world right now, the Middle East in particular, with this war, this pending ground invasion into Gaza by Israel. Just to start off, would you kind of level set for us and explain this the seriousness of what we're actually seeing and the potential problems, all of the issues that really do impact not just America, and not just the region of the Middle East, but the globe.
Well, thanks, Hogan. Let me take you back a little bit and go to 30,000 feet, go way up high, like if we were on a commercial airline looking down at the earth. And what we see is the U.S. has three primary adversaries: Russia, China, and Iran. Now, China's an existential threat to us. They're the big guy on the block. They're the ones that want to reorder the entire world. Their henchman is Russia, which used to be a great power as the Soviet Union, but still has a lot of nuclear weapons and is a Wants to restore Putin wants to restore the Russian Empire. And then you've got Iran, which is a regional power. But if you asked me, when I was National Security Advisor, what did I worry about every morning when I got up? It was what was Iran doing that day, because they've got terrorist proxies all over the Middle East. And so what have we seen since President Trump left office? We've seen Russia invade Ukraine, and they got because the first thing the Biden administration tried to do was appease Russia. They gave him the New START treaty with no Which was Putin's number one foreign policy objective, with no strings attached. They renewed it. Unlike us, we said you got to stop building new tactical nuclear weapons if you want an extension of the treaty. We wouldn't give it to him without a concession. Biden gave it to him with no concessions. Then he said, "Hey, build Nord Stream 2. Make Europe energy dependent on Russia." And you can, and, you know, we stopped Nord Stream 2, Hogan, as you recall. And the Biden guy said, came in and said, "Hey, we're everything Trump was for, we're against. So Trump was for stopping Nord Stream 2, so we're for building it." At the same time, they canceled the Keystone Pipeline here in America. So they made Russia a massive energy exporter and took our energy independence away and started making us rely on Venezuela and Iran and Russia for our oil. So what did the Russians do in return? They decided to reinvade Ukraine. Now, go to the Middle East, turn your head a little bit, take a little perspective. Iran basically controls Hamas and Hezbollah. Hamas won't do anything without permission from Iran. They won't fire a BB gun across the border without permission from Iran. And Iran saw Russia invade Ukraine, And remember, we didn't deter him. We didn't stop him from doing it. President Biden came out and said, well, if it's a minor incursion, that might be okay. You know, maybe we won't do anything. And then, you know, our deterrence failed. Russia invaded Ukraine. Now, thank goodness the Ukrainians used those Javelin missiles that President Trump got them and stopped the initial invasion. And I give the Biden guys credit for supplying the Ukrainians with what they need to fight on. So that's good. But the Iranians watched that and they said, well, if Russia can invade Ukraine, we want to wipe out Israel. We want to kill every Jew in the Middle East. We'll turn our serial killers, or, you know, I don't even call the Hamas guys terrorists anymore. That gives terrorists a bad name. I mean, these are, it's like having a bunch of Ted Bundys and Charles Mansons and John Wayne Gacy's running around. And the things they did were just despicable. So yeah, Rand turned them loose.
That's an interesting way to look at it. Is it as simple as the appeasement, which lures these people into thinking they can get away with anything they want? When you give them $6 billion and Iran and their proxies, it just go crazy. Is it as simple as that?
It is, Tim. And it wasn't just $6 billion. That's just the ransom we paid for hostages. You know, in the Trump administration, we brought home, you know, 58 hostages from all over the world, Iran, North Korea, Russia, China, Venezuela. We didn't pay a dime of ransom to anybody. Even when the North Koreans tried to stick us with Otto Warmbier's medical bills, we refused to pay them. But we paid them $6 billion in ransom. But the big payment, Tim, was turning a blind eye to their oil sales and not enforcing sanctions. And the Iranians made $70 billion in oil sales over the last 2 years. Iran's become a very rich country. They had foreign currency reserves of $4 billion when we left office. Their foreign currency reserves now are $70 billion. So Iran's gotten rich under the Biden administration, not just from the ransoms, but from being able to sell their oil without restriction. And so just like we tried to appease Russia, we tried to appease Iran. And what happened? Iran invaded Israel because these thugs, these Ayatollahs, the Putins and the KGB guys of the world, they don't accept your goodwill. They pocket whatever you give them and then say, what have you done for me lately? And we are no goodwill from Russia, no goodwill from Iran. And now we're doing the same thing with China. Like, remember, guys, it wasn't too long ago, Sonny and Hogan and Tim, that the Iranians flew a spy balloon over our country. I mean, brazen. They just flew a balloon like a Goodyear blimp right over America, and it stopped over all of our nuclear sites, our ICBM sites, our Air Force bases, and then our submarine pens in Georgia. And they took pictures and collected intelligence, and we let them do it. And instead of, you know, turning the spigot off for China stopping American investment, China putting tariffs on like President Trump did, we sent four cabinet secretaries to China to kowtow to them, to Janet Yellen, the Secretary of the Treasury, went and she was like literally bowed. She was bowing to Xi Jinping when she met him. You remember that? She bowed to him like seven times. So the Chinese don't respect us. Now they're looking at Taiwan. They've watched Iran invade Israel. They've watched through Hamas. They've watched Russia invade Ukraine. And now they're thinking about invading Taiwan. So the world has become very dangerous right now.
Well, the joke's on China because Gavin Newsom is over there now. So there can't be any punishment worse than that. As far as I'm concerned.
Well, and that's Robert's governor, by the way.
Oh yeah, that's right. You are a California guy.
I moved to Utah 6 months ago, guys.
Oh, okay.
Nah, you'll always be Californian to me.
Sonny, did you want to jump in?
Yes, I'm sorry. I was just texting y'all saying I think my internet is being very splotchy, so I apologize in advance. One question that I had for you is, you know, under President Trump, when things were peaceful and he had all these great people like you around him advising him, and now we see with the Biden administration just how everything has just gone completely off the deep end. Do you think he has anyone truly competent around him advising him on any of these foreign policy decisions? What are your thoughts on Blinken or on Lloyd Austin?
Well, look, Blinken and Sullivan and Austin are smart guys. Burns is pretty good over at CIA. He's a solid guy. But it's not whether they're smart or not. It's their philosophy, Sonny. It's, you know, they believe that it's the Obama inaugural speech, right? If we stretch out our hand, our adversaries will unclench their fists. That's not going to happen. It's like, I tell people, the Iranians aren't that into us. I mean, we can pay the Iranians billions and billions of dollars, and they just don't want to have a relationship with us. Sorry, they hate us. They hate our values. They hate our free speech. They hate the fact that we defend Israel. And they're not going to change. It doesn't matter how much money we give the Iranians, they're not going to change. We're not changing them. The same thing with Vladimir Putin, the same thing with Xi Jinping. But the philosophy of appeasement, Remember, appeasement's popular, especially for the Democrats, because you put off hard decisions and you avoid a war in the short term. But appeasement never works in the long term. You always pay a higher cost down the road. Churchill said this after Munich. When Chamberlain came back from Munich, he was and said we have peace in our time, he was wildly popular in Britain because they just fought the First World War. They didn't want to fight another war. He said, you know, there's not going to be a war with Herr Hitler. And the only person said, we've suffered a defeat without a battle, and the consequences are going to travel with us a long way down the road, was Winston Churchill. But the rest of Parliament was wildly in favor of what Chamberlain did. And so I think the Democrats think if they appease, they can get through the next election, they can put something off. But the problem is that weakness is provocative. And our adversaries see it as weakness, and they see a gap, and they go for it. And so they're not rational like we are. If I do something for you, Sonny, if I do something for you, Hogan, I'm going to expect a little goodwill down the road from you. Our adversaries aren't like that. They don't think the way we do. They're not Western in thought, and they're not courteous. They're not cordial. And so if I do you a solid now, you're going to do me a solid later. That's not how they work. And we need to understand that.
Speaking of the people that he's got, that Biden has around him, your immediate successor, Jake Sullivan, and I don't know if you know him or not, I imagine you've crossed paths with him. He wrote an essay for the publication Foreign Affairs that was submitted for their print edition prior to Hamas's attack on October 7th. And so he had some assumptions in there, and they let him scrub it, add some things and take things out for the online version, but for the print version, it was too late. And this is a segment that was removed. I don't know if you're aware of this yet, Robert, but this is part of Jake Sullivan's piece that was removed in Foreign Affairs. Quote, the region is, this is talking about the Middle East, the region is quieter than it has been for decades. The progress is fragile, to be sure, but it is also not an accident. Biden's approach returns discipline to U.S. policy. It emphasizes deterring aggression, de-escalating conflicts, and integrating the region. So that was removed because, quite obviously, Biden's strategy, let's say, did not work in keeping peace in the Middle East, as we've seen. You know, there they are convincing themselves. Is this the sort of stuff that it just sounds good in the faculty lounge at Dartmouth, but then in practice, they have to go out there and they're experimenting with their big pointy-headed ideas? I mean, how do you see this? Isn't that embarrassing?
Well, look, I'm sure Jake's a little embarrassed by that, and he wishes he had a do-over. I mean, you know, and Foreign Affairs let him have a do-over. They would have never let us do that, Hogan, I don't think, if you went home.
No.
But when you're a Democrat, you got certain advantages with the press. So you know, good for Jake being able to scrub it, just like the Soviet newspapers and that sort of thing. The mainstream press will accommodate the Democrats. But look, the problem, Tim, is it goes to the premise of what Jake was talking about. They felt, and it's the same thing they felt like in the Obama administration, if they appeased Iran, if they just made Iran like us, and if we just gave them enough money, the Iranians would become, quote, responsible stakeholders. That's like one of the terms that they throw around in the faculty lounge at Yale, where all these guys were professors. And the toughest decisions they had to make was who got to be, you know, what lefty got to be, you know, tenured. Do you take the far left guy or just the regular left guy for tenure?
You're right.
And, those are hard fought political battles, you know, and it's like Woodrow Wilson, when he was asked, when he was president of the United States, you know, he'd been president of Princeton University. And they said, what do you miss about Princeton? And he said, the politics. And so the politics are pretty heavy in the faculty lounge. So I think these guys feel like they're ready for you know, international politics when they get out of the faculty lounge. But we saw what happened with Obama. It's a replay of the same program. We went into the disastrous JCPOA, the nuclear deal. Iran promised that they'd be responsible. They promised they wouldn't develop a nuclear weapon for 10 years. After 10 years, they get to develop a nuclear weapon. They get to buy and sell arms on the open market. And in the meantime, we give them total sanctions relief. And under the Obama administration, Iran made $150 billion in sanctions relief. And the theory of the Democrats was, well, they'll use this to, you know, have government entitlement programs and support the middle class in Iran and give it to labor unions. They made the mistake of assuming the Iranians were like us, and that they take all this cash and push it into the domestic economy of Iran. Well, the Iranians didn't take any of it. Part of it went to corruption. The Ayatollahs and their henchmen stole part of it. Part of it went to the nuclear program. Part of it went to the ballistic missile program. But most of it went to the Houthis, Khatib Hezbollah, Bashar al-Assad in Syria, Hezbollah and Hamas, so that they could build up their terrorist networks to kill Americans, kill Jews, and kill moderate Arabs. And so when Trump came in and said, look, this hasn't worked, this is crazy, and we showed strength, as soon as our Arab partners in Israel realized that we were going to be strong and protect them and had their back, that's when the peace process started. That's how we got the Abraham Accords. That's how we healed the Gulf Rift between Qatar and the UAE and Saudi. Because when we talk about peace through strength, it's not just a cliche. The peace comes, but you have to have strength first. The peace is a result of the strength. It's not the other way around. These guys want to have peace without strength, and it doesn't happen. So again, it's just a different philosophy. They want to appease. They want to reach out their hands. They want to, show weakness and hope that that goodwill will be reciprocated by our adversaries. But in the Middle East, with the Ayatollahs, and these guys are stone cold killers, as we've seen. The Russians are all KGB guys. The Chinese are the last Stalinist party on earth. They don't care about goodwill from us. They want to win, and they want to kill us and defeat us. And so us stretching out our hand isn't going to get us anything but get our hands burned or our wrists slapped.
Yeah, and I think this is the core of the issue that so many either refuse to acknowledge or don't want to admit. And you touched on it so well there, Robert. They do hate us. They do want to kill us. They want to kill the Jews. And when they tell us that, it's like so many in academia, so many on the left go, no. Just give them some money. Give them some iPhones. All they want is like modern life like we have it. They just want what we have. And that's not what they want. And they're very obvious and open about their desire for death and destruction. They mock Israel for protecting their children, for protecting their people, because they think death is honorable. And so they use their children, they use their women for shields. And in the process, they win a PR battle too, which I'm sure we'll talk about later. But explain, if you would, to the listeners, why or how so many on the left just refuse to believe what Hamas says they want to do, what Iran says it wants to do, which is clearly designed for death and destruction.
Well, we don't want to take them at their words, because what they say is so outlandish here. When we hear death to America, death to Israel, they talk about, they want Palestine to be free from the river to the sea. Well, what does that mean? That means they want all the land. They don't want that's not a two-state solution they're talking about. That means they want all the land. And it's not just that they want the land. They want the Jews dead. So when they say Palestine will be free from the river to the sea, and people are chanting that on college campuses and mouthing it, I don't think some of these kids even know what it means. They're talking about another Holocaust. They're talking about taking 9 million Jews and either exiling them or killing them. And the idea that they just want to be modern, Hogan, these kids on the college campuses, the folks on the street in London and Paris and Sydney, they were chanting, thousands of people were chanting, gas the Jews. Well, guess what? They all have iPhones. They all live in Australia. They live in Paris. They live in France. They live in the UK. They live in America. And yet they still want to kill. And this anti-Semitism is just so abhorrent. But giving them an iPhone didn't fix it. And sending them to the best universities in America on scholarship didn't fix it. And I'm telling you, one thing we got to figure out is any of those that were chanting and marching that are illegal immigrants, illegal aliens, I know you're not supposed to say that now. They're supposed to be unpapered, wonderful people. But, they use facial. We know they can use facial recognition in the crowd. They've used it on January 6th and otherwise. They had to find every illegal immigrant that's marching for Hamas and saying death to Israel and death to America and deport them like tomorrow.
You mentioned propaganda victories, or one of you, either you or Hogan, and there was, I think, one of the more embarrassing episodes in American media, where when there was the allegation that Israel had blown up a hospital, last week. It turns out that it was a failed rocket launch from not even Hamas, but one of their Islamic Jihad allies there, and it blew up in the parking lot, and it was not bombing of the hospital by the an Israeli airstrike. Yet almost the entirety of the American media reported it from Hamas's side, saying as many as 500 people killed in a Israeli attack on this hospital. How much of a factor is, I mean, what's that worth to them when they get a propaganda, even though it was later corrected? It's way too late. The corrections are, even if they're 24 hours later or whatever it is, they've already won that propaganda battle. How valuable is that to them? And what's really the purpose of that?
Well, it's hugely valuable. And Churchill said this in World War II, that a lie gets halfway around the world before the truth gets up in the morning and puts his pants on. And so, you know, we saw it with this. This was Palestinian jihadi rocket that, by the way, didn't even hit the hospital, hit the parking lot of the hospital. And you would think the media would be embarrassed and ashamed. You said the media was embarrassed. They're not embarrassed. They're not ashamed. Even the New York Times is
right.
The New York Times is still trying to say, well, maybe it was still Israeli, but we can't trust the video. We don't really know what happened. I mean, we've got the audio of the Hajis, of the jihadis, saying, "Oh gosh, that was our rocket. It hit the hospital. That was ours," and that's not enough for the New York Times. So they're not embarrassed by it. And these are massive propaganda wins. And look, what we're going to see is it's going to continue. And the space for Israel to act to protect themselves, to root out Hamas branch and root and trunk, so they're not living next to a bunch of serial killers, is going to close, because you know, the world is anti-Semitic, anti-Israel, anti-American. And with more and more of this propaganda and misinformation that comes out of the region, it's going to be harder and harder for the Israelis to act.
This is by design, though. The setup here, to me, I'm waiting, because what they are now, so many in our government, so many in the squad and all those folks, they're pointing to the fact that Israel, you know, when they attack, that, look, you got to protect the children in Palestine. You have to, you know, this barbarism by Israel cannot stand. They're kind of starting to set this up where, hey, you got to be careful, and you can't commit war crimes in a war. You can't do things like Hamas did. But like, if when Russia invaded Ukraine, if Ukraine then, you know, attacked Russia, and Russia used women and children as human shields, we wouldn't blame Ukraine. We'd be saying, why would Vladimir Putin do something like that? I'm just so confused, because they're setting this up where when this invasion into Gaza happens, people are going to turn on Israel pretty quickly, up to and including, I believe, our officials in our government. And they're going to be the ones that kind of point the finger at Israel and say, look at what you're doing. When these two things, the killing of a child, just beheading them because you hate them, is not the same as a collateral damage situation in which you're trying to attack a rocket launcher position in Gaza underneath a school where Hamas refuses to move the children out of there and instead chooses to put them there so they can have a better narrative. I'm really concerned with this from a future standpoint. And so, Robert, I guess, does this worry you at all, that the fortitude of like this nation and many who actually are standing with Israel right now will turn on them quickly when Israel starts to not just defend itself, but when they actually go on the attack here to try to eradicate Hamas?
No, you're absolutely right, Hogan. And that's why all of us who have Jewish friends, who love Israel, who believe in the same values that Israel has, that we have, we got to stand up for Israel now. We're going to have to fight like hell, because there's no moral equivalence between deliberately targeting terrorists, going into killers, going into Israel, targeting women and children and elderly and you know, Holocaust survivors and people in wheelchairs, cutting their heads off, burning families alive, killing kids in front of their parents, killing parents in front of their kids, taking hostages, taking, you know, infants as hostage. There's no moral equivalence to that. And the Israelis who are trying to wipe out a terrorist army, and that terrorist army is using human shields and using their own people, their own Palestinians as human shields, and there's collateral damage there. The Israelis aren't targeting the civilians. They're targeting the killers. And the civilians are getting killed in the crossfire. but the blood of every Palestinian who dies in Gaza, it's on the head of Hamas. It's not on Israel. Hamas did the brutal attack. Hamas committed all the true war crimes, the heinous crimes, the horror movie type crimes that we've never even seen ISIS commit. That's what provoked it. And number two, they're using their own people and hostages as a human shield. So the blood of anyone who dies in Gaza is squarely on the head of Hamas.
Well, Robert,
we need to be bold, and we need to get out and say that, because Hogan, you're 100% right. We're going to hear this false equivalency. Well, Israel killed kids, and what's the difference of getting burned to death and being killed by a bomb? It's all the same if you're a kid. And there's a certain, you know, there's an attractive logic to it, but it's just not true.
You know, I've even had people message me on Instagram that I went to college with, because I've posted some pro-Israel things on my story, and I've had people respond saying the same things. Well, what about the kids in Gaza? Why don't you care about them? And, you know, I'm like, how much time do you have? Let me explain this to you. But I want to back up to the beginning of the war, or to when Israel was first attacked, because I've heard on, you know, Fox News and the radio and other things like that, they say that they're were all of these intelligence failures, and that's why Hamas was able to get in and attack, but they don't want to talk about it. They say now's not the time to talk about it, and I understand that. But Robert, I'd like to get your thoughts on that. Do you think there were intelligence failures? Do you think this was just a really well-executed plan by Hamas that they were going to carry out no matter what? How do you think this happened?
Well, it's a good question. Look, I don't want to lay anything on Bibi's head now or on the Israeli government head, because they're trying to deal with a terrible crisis and defend their nation and protect the people. But at some point it's going to come out. And what my expectation is going to be is going to be similar to what happened to us in 9/11. The Western governments and the high-tech governments, and Israel's an incredibly high-tech society. They've got unbelievable collection abilities. They can collect electronic intelligence, emails on the internet. They can collect signals intelligence, cell phones. They've got satellite capability. And so what happens is, I think we get a little too reliant on those capabilities. And our adversaries aren't stupid. I mean, these people they're evil, but they're not dumb. And so they start figuring out, okay, let's start running messages, handwriting messages on notepads and running them between people using runners. Let's do our meetings in person where we're not talking on the telephone. We'll take two flights. We'll fly to Egypt and then into Tehran. And we'll meet in Tehran or we'll meet in Beirut in person and make our plans and hatch our evil schemes in person and not do it over the phone, or we'd be intercepted. So I think the Israelis were probably caught a little off guard, because I think they were over reliant on technology. And we, you know, it's very hard to have human intelligence in an organization like Hamas, because if they find out someone is a informer, that man or woman is dead immediately. So it's hard to develop a human network with organizations like Hamas or Islamic Jihad, number one. And number two, the technological stuff, the gee whiz stuff, is so cool, and we get so much out of it that sometimes we just rely on it a little too much.
And they were planning this for a year, by the way.
Mm-hmm. They took their time.
I want to ask you another thing about that, something that I perceive to be a propaganda victory. And you, as somebody who has worked in this, in the intelligence community, the national security community, and also in the White House, would have some particular insight into this. This is Karine Jean-Pierre, the White House press secretary, on Monday of this week, when she was asked a question, and you'll hear it. She was asked a question about the level of concern that President Biden and others in the White House have. How much concern do they have about the rise of anti-Semitism following Hamas's attack and then Israel's subsequent retaliation and fighting back? Here is this exchange as she's asked about rising anti-Semitism.
Level of concern right now about the potential rise of anti-Semitism in light of everything that's going on in Israel?
So a couple of things. We have not seen any credible threats. I know there's been always questions about credible threats, and so just want to make sure that that's out there. But look, Muslim and those perceived to be Muslim have endured a disproportionate number of hate-fueled attacks, and certainly President Biden understands that many of our Muslim Arab Americans and Palestinian American loved ones and neighbors are worried about the hate being directed at their communities, and that is something you heard the president speak.
So I hope it wasn't breaking up on your end. It sounded a little broken up on my end. But the bottom line is she was asked about rising anti-Semitism and what's the president's concern about that. And she answered that we see no indication of that. And then she immediately pivoted to we hope that there is not Islamophobia going on. So she completely brushed off the idea that there would be rising anti-Semitism and focused instead on it's like that Norm MacDonald tweet brought to life where he says something about the fact that his greatest fear is if what he said, Norm MacDonald said, what terrifies me is if ISIS were to detonate a nuclear device and kill 50 million Americans. Imagine the backlash against peaceful Muslims. Right. So that's when something like that happens and you have the White House press secretary, the chief spokesperson for the president of the United States, dismisses the idea of anti-Semitism and instead focuses on the idea of backlash against Muslims. What sort of a signal is that to Hamas and militants around the world? Is that in itself a propaganda victory?
It's a huge propaganda victory. It's a green light. Now, I think she says she misunderstood the question. Later, she said that, I'm sure. Sure, she
yeah, wanted to do all that. That's but, not entirely plausible.
No, but look, the far left in the Democrat Party has been infiltrated, and we've said this for many years, by anti-Semites. It's very anti-Semitic. It's very pro-terrorist. They've got members of Congress like Tlaib and Omar, who are, you know, could be mouthpieces for the Islamic Jihad. I mean, it's incredible. And I think that Jewish Americans and Jewish liberals are starting to wake up. You see with Bill Maher, you see with others going, holy crap, these people want to kill us. We thought they were fellow liberals. We thought they were open-minded. We thought they were just, you know, concerned about minority rights and free speech. And now they're starting to wake up. And I think there are members of Congress, Democrat members of Congress, Jewish, especially Jewish members of Congress who are Democrats, who realize that they've got colleagues in their own halls of Congress that want to kill them. And so, but because they're so powerful, because they've indoctrinated so many young Democrats, I mean, you see that the marches on the college campuses, you know, shouting, you know, anti-Israeli, anti-Semitic, anti-Jewish slogans. I think Karen Jean-Pierre and the rest of them are terrified of what they've got. You know, this is their base. This is their hardcore, yeah, solid voters who need to come out and put Biden over the top in another year and a half in the presidential election. So I think they're terrified of the base, and so I think they're going to just like they appease our adversaries overseas, they're going to be very careful about what they say to alienate the squad and their followers. But I think the Democrat Party has a reckoning coming, because the Democrat Party can only win with, you know, wealthy Jewish donors who have been the heart and soul of the Democrat Party for many years. They used to talk about the Waxman Berman machine out in California. Well, I think there are a lot of Jewish Democrats who are waking up after October 7th and realizing they may not have a home in the Democrat Party. And one thing I'll tell them, President Trump kept Israel safe. President Trump moved the embassy to Jerusalem. We recognize Golan. Come to the Republican Party. For all my Jewish friends who believe in free speech, and you know, we may not agree on everything. We may not agree on abortion or that sort of thing. But no one in the Republican Party wants to kill you. We welcome you with open arms, and we want you to come over and join us.
I mean, isn't that amazing? You have to be worried about the pro-Hamas caucus in your own party. Isn't that's just astounding.
Terrifying. I will say, Robert, I was embarrassed to even admit this, but when I went into the White House, I just didn't realize how much policy affected people in this country and around the globe. And we really do appreciate your time tonight. I know we said we'd get you out of here in a little bit, but I did want to say, you outlined the importance of what the policies from the previous administration did to keep the region safe, to keep the aggressors at bay, to prop up our nation and our people first. We were more feared and we were more loved and we were more respected, obviously, several years ago with Trump than with where we are now and Joe Biden. So I just want to thank you for your wisdom, not just here on the podcast, but for our time serving together in the White House, but now on television and all the other avenues you're doing, because it really does show how important these policies are to just the safety of people around the world. So just thank you for your service and really appreciate your time tonight too.
Yeah, well, it was a privilege working with you in the White House, Hogan. You did a great job for the country, and thank you for your service, and Sonny and Tim. Great to see you on video, and hope to see you in person soon.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Robert. O'Brien, the former National Security Advisor to former President Donald Trump. And this has been the Line Drive Podcast.